Hello, this is the CoLab podcast. I am Charlie Wilson. I work as the communications officer for the International Permaculture CoLab. Today I have a very special guest. I'm very looking forward to this interview. So please, can you introduce yourself?
Hi. My name is Clement Matomason from Ghana, and I'm working with Dream Village Ghana, a regenerative agriculture space where we train young people into developing regenerative agriculture methods. But it's also just a space for people who are enthusiastic about agriculture, permaculture, design, and things related to protecting the environment generally. So I'm glad to be here and honored to meet your audience as well.
Yes, great. Thank you. So, can you tell me what is the Dream Village project and how did it come about? How did it start?
Dream Village actually started back in 2006. I was looking for purpose basically, and I grew up on the streets, and a lot of people helped me to become who I am. So I was really thinking, what's my purpose in life? With all the adventures and stuff that I went through, how can I give back to the society? And then I realized there was, if I had my experience, people helped me. There's a proverb in Africa that says it takes a village to raise a child. So I was thinking, my village was in so many scattered places. So how do I make this place smaller so that more people can come to a space and find inspiration? And so I thought about this, creating this space where the older generation can share their knowledge with the new generation so that they don't have to restart all over every time they want to build something. So I visualized this idea on a wall. And since then, I've been trying to start it. I started it in more than four places all the time. It collapsed because I didn't have the right support. I didn't have my mind was still not so matured to do that. So every time I started it, something happened and it didn't really go well. And then I had to restart all over again. But I was passionate about it. I knew that was the right thing to do. But you normally would start it in a place where it's so isolated and remote that it was not easy for people to reach or to get the right mindset. And also, I wasn't really well equipped to be able to provide the training because majority of the kind of training I wanted to offer was specifically regenerative agriculture. But the conventional schools weren't training people in regenerative agriculture. So you wouldn't find the right trainers. Always it was the people who were interested in using chemicals, fertilizers, blah, blah, blah. And that I knew that was not what I wanted to do. But I also didn't have the skills to accomplish that. So I started looking for ways to accomplish that by working with local communities and farmers. And over time, over several attempts, eventually I was able to start it up in one location back in 2016. Basically, it was actually accidental. I went to this community to help them find water because they were having water challenges. Then I provided the water, but the way of pumping the water for the community, I had to use a generator. And at that time, I was living in a bigger city. And I just went to this community to provide them water. Now, what happened was that when we were pumping this water for the community, we had to use a generator in the middle of the night so that in the daytime the community can get water. So we assigned some of the people to do it, but some of them were afraid. They were having these fears of being attacked by some mysterious spirits or something like that. And so they wouldn't do the pumping in the night. They would wait till the morning when everybody was coming for water to also pump, and it was putting stress on the machine. So I said, no, we pump in the night. And they were like, no, we are too afraid to do that. So I will just go there with my car, park it, and then pump the water throughout the night. And then in the morning they have water just to demonstrate to them it's possible and there's not no spirit or whatever coming to attack you. Now, During that process, normally I would just bring foodstuffs and stuff and set up fire. And then I would just spend the night, playing music and pumping and just having fun. And a lot of young people started coming around. So they will come around to also sit around the fire with me. We were telling stories. I would give them food, snacks, and stuff like that. And all of a sudden, I had all these young people there who were just coming to entertain themselves. Like, well, let's put it to use. We started growing vegetables. We started building some gardens. And all of a sudden, it became a small village. And then so sometimes I would go to the city, visit my family. And then most part of the time, I would come to the village. And I thought, well, all these young people, what do? You train them, we bring the skills. And all of a sudden, the same idea that I had to build a few years ago, all of a sudden started taking place. And then it started growing from there. And then people started coming, the community people started helping. They would come in the night and tell stories, old people, all this. And all of a sudden, this became a thriving community. And that's how Dream Village eventually became possible in this location.
Amazing. Oh, it's great that you kept going and then it just happened so magically and synchronously.
Exactly.
It's wonderful. So maybe you can tell me, what does life look like in this village? What do people do? How do they spend their days?
Yeah, so what mainly happened was that once we started building structures, more and more young people were coming who were like, okay, I want to raise animals, I want to become a journalist, I want. And these are people that the formal education system booted them out because maybe they failed one subject or they were not doing so well in terms of the formal education and they were kicked out. But the entire of this area, most of them are not skilled. So a lot of these young guys were put through school, formal school. They didn't learn the trade of their fathers and their parents. They just went through the formal school. They came out, no skill. So they are really in the middle and not knowing what to do. So I thought, okay, let's provide skill training first. So we started doing entrepreneurship skills training, helping them to know how to start up a business, how to build up a business, how to manage it. And then started introducing some digital tools, how to use it to promote you on social media, how to build right from how, what is your business and how do you start it? And then we started inviting experts in those fields. So if we see someone who is good in poultry farming, for instance, and there is a young person who is passionate about it, we invite someone from in that space. And then we all learn. And then so before we, you knew it, it was, we will go to the farm, we will do the garden, we will pump the water, we'll provide, and we're learning about so many things because so many people came with different ideas of what they wanted to do. In fact, we learned even about journalism, how to publish documents
Wow.
and stuff like this. So because so many people, once people's basic needs are met and they move out of survival mode, then they start to dream really crazy. And because we had food provided there, we have some basic accommodation that they could sleep and wake up in the same space. Young people that were far away who didn't know what to do with their lives started coming here. And then once they came, you had this all these ideas coming in. And with the ideas also came a lot of power, manpower, labor, skills, and then all of a sudden, you started learning about things and so we wake up in the daytime. The first thing we did was going to the farm because that was our basic source of support because the farm provided all the food. We go there and then at about night after nine, normally we go very early. By six, we are already in the farm. Nine, in Ghana, it starts getting very hot in the daytime. So once it starts getting hot, we come home. And then we go into the classroom where we are learning about entrepreneurship skills. We are learning about marketing, branding, things like that. And I brought in some old computers. And so because of that, we could also connect to the internet and start looking out. So even when we do not have a trainer, we will go to like online Harvard website to learn about business modeling and marketing. We will go to websites or YouTube channels that were teaching people about permaculture and stuff like this. So even when we didn't have trainers, we could just use the power of the internet and then leverage on that to provide training. We did soap making, Yeah, it was just exciting periods, you know,
Wow.
whatever idea somebody has, okay, let's go online, let's see if we can find it, and let's try to do it. And that is how come Dream Village thrived throughout this period.
Ah, it's amazing. Very
Yes,
inspiring.
it is.
So you're teaching and learning, like, sounds like a really diverse syllabus, lots of
Definitely,
different things.
definitely.
So not just the permaculture, also all of the branding. Yeah, these things
Yeah,
have to
yes.
get
I
very
mean,
detailed.
if you are designing permaculture and you cannot brand yourself, if you cannot sell what you're doing, then in the end, you're just doing a homestead in your own corner. You know, so
True.
it's important for them to find the tools where they can see how do we put it out there? How do I make my voice heard? How do I continue? Because permaculture is a continuous learning effect. So if you have to, you need to find ways to leverage on what other people are doing, and you don't have to make the same mistakes. So it's a diverse world, and agriculture in general is really a diverse environment. You need to be constantly growing yourself, studying the environment, studying what other people are doing and failing, and then avoiding those same mistakes so that you can have a bit more success. And especially a lot of young people who do not have a room for so much mistakes, our space becomes like a safe spot. You know, you can make the mistake there
Yeah.
because nobody's going to query you. And so that makes it even much more interesting.
Great. Amazing. So how many people do you think are living in the village, going to the schools?
Yeah,
Roughly.
so officially our training program caters for 20 people annually every year, but we also provide services for the like the agric offices around us. So they come there for their post-harvest training, their other kinds of training they come there for. We also connect with the local schools. So we do a lot of extension work.
Ah,
So
yeah.
in a day we have sometimes 200, 300 people coming in and out, especially if we have students from the senior high schools coming there to learn about vegetable production or even how to set up irrigation and stuff like that. So it eventually became a very busy place. Also we also focus a lot of energy in training smallholder farmers how to adopt regenerative methods. So like teaching them how to do composting, teaching them how to use organic pest control, because how to especially saving seeds. We are very strong on saving seeds and also using organic fertilizers and chemicals. So we want to encourage them. It's not just enough to tell farmers, oh, stop using chemicals, and you have to give them solutions, alternatives. So we also gather a lot of farmers, especially women groups, and then we help them to build comp learn how to build compost, and show them how to use neem oil as pest control and stuff like that.
Great.
So it cannot be measured in terms of a specific number, but it changes. Sometimes you have 200, sometimes you only have our student group that are there. But on
Yeah.
average, we were having close to 30 people, including the staff within the space.
Okay, great. So it's like you have your core group, but then there's lots of other people involved kind of
Yeah,
on the edges. Yeah.
exactly.
Amazing. And I wonder what kind of structures you have there, like what kind of buildings, and was it the
Yes.
volunteers who built them, or did you get people in? How did you do it?
Yeah, so our focus has always been focused on sustainable materials in terms of building. So we in the local context, it is always people know how to easily build with mud. And then they roof it with the grass. So they touch buildings. Now, through my research, I found out that especially for the thatch roofing, which we built a couple of them together with the students, we realized that every year you have to remove the grass and the wood and then replace them. Every year you have to remove that because, yeah, obviously we have a lot of termites, and because we are not really treating them with chemicals, you're constantly having this infection infestation into the into yeah, it's like basically mulching a building. That's what it is, you know. So we realize that that kind of building, it's nice and cool, But on the long run, it's not sustainable because you have to constantly cut trees to re-roof and redo all these buildings at least every 2 years. So we started researching and we found the Nubian vault. The Nubian vault is an architecture system mainly in the Egyptians and Moroccan. You can find Nubian vaults around the Israel and all those places. So we decided to, because our people were already building with mud, so they are not, yeah, it's not new, something new. The only thing is how to build the technique of the dome to do the roofing. So we brought in friends, other guys. We started researching and we found people who were into building the vault. So we contacted them and then we started bringing them in to also train our students how to build the technique. So majority of our core buildings is focused on the Nubian architecture, the Nubian vault.
Ah, that's great. Okay, very interesting.
Yeah.
And I guess it's a hot climate, so I wonder what kind of crops or foods you focus on growing. What is the most
Yeah.
common?
So because we are using the syntropic agroforestry system, we mainly focus on most of the indigenous like baobab. For tree big trees, we focus on baobab, the arbora, malina for the trees. And then undergrowth, we also have like the okra, the sweet potatoes, the pepper, those kind of most tropical crops we try to grow within our agroforestry system. But our target is often what grows locally, because in the end, those are what the local people can make use of. Of course, we try to bring in some external crops that is just interesting to trick the mind of the people. Right now, we even introduce things like coffee and cocoa, which naturally wouldn't grow around, but they are doing very well because once the soil quality is good, basically anything can grow.
Great, amazing. And I wonder who can join your college? Like, how do people apply? Do they have to fit a certain criteria? How do you bring
Yeah.
people in? How do you choose people?
Yeah. For our students, we are so much more conscious about the local students. So we for the students, normally we will go from school to school, talking to young people within the schools. We organize community entrance programs where we talk to young people about the need to protect our environment, but also the need to find, instead of looking for jobs, to create one. So we do a lot of community entry. We have an online, quite a lot of online presence as well through our Dream Village website, on social media, and all that. We have some presence there. But apart from that, we go from community to community, talking to people to get them in. We also have space for volunteers. So we have quite a number of volunteers from US, from Europe, from Japan, coming to do research on regenerative agriculture methods. And because we are mainly working with indigenous communities, so it also becomes interesting for people who want to learn the language and kind of integrate within the community. And yeah, we make it open. Provided you can read and write, you are welcome. So it's not a space that is very restricted to a specific group of people. Our focus is not to limit it to Ghana. Our focus is to create a model environment that anybody can pick and replicate in any African countries. For instance, we have someone who understudied what we were doing. They came, they saw what we're doing, and they found inspiration, and they started Lon Lon Farms in Sierra Leone. There's another guy who came, saw what we were doing, especially with the entrepreneurship training. They started the Masaya Duka Academy in Kenya. So it was like a Masaya group, and they are doing similar thing. And so our idea is to have a model to show people that you can really start from small, using your local resources and grow from there. Usually the picture is, okay, we want something big and huge, and then we get clustered in the process. So, but what we do is, how do we use our local resources? How do we work with the communities that we are connected to? to leverage on whatever materials are available to start. And once you can start and people can see that you are committed to it, more and more people will come to support. And that's how we've been growing since then.
Wow, so you're already inspiring other people. It's amazing.
Definitely, definitely.
It's so great. Yeah, listening to you, it's very inspiring.
Thank
And
you.
yeah, I see that the school and the village is kind of the main focus, but you mentioned some other things your foundation does. I saw also on the website, like helping people with water collection. Maybe you can mention some of the other things.
Our focus is to tailor the need to the solution to the needs of the community. So you will find that Dream Village, sometimes people ask me, what exactly are you doing? Because then they get confused when we talk about water, when we talk about electricity, when we talk about irrigation, when they get confused. But you have to understand, when we go to a community or when we are working with the community, and usually they are the ones that reach out to us, we want you to come to us. So we go there, we meet with the chiefs, and they're like, yeah, we have a water crisis and we need you to help us to solve it. So we first have to identify, do you have a water source? If you have a water source, how can we use organic methods to purify your water to make it drinkable? If you do not have a water source, how do we leverage on either community support or look for grants that can help us to, for instance, drill a borehole? But we have even communities that boreholes won't work because they have very low aquifer. So the best is to drench a dam. And when you drench a dam, you have to put a dam liner because then the water, if not, the water will seep through. And then once that happens, you also have to think about, okay, if there is water, these people need to grow some vegetables. You don't just have water and leave it just like that and only use for drinking. Then all these ideas, and once water is available, all kinds of ideas can start popping up, And then so now all of a sudden it's water and it's irrigation and it is solar because you need the solar to power the irrigation, and it is all kinds of things popping up around it. So we have done vocational programs where we set up vocational centers in communities just to train young people or young women especially how to weave and make clothes for themselves. So that's one aspect of it. We have a community that we are doing water purification using organic materials like moringa neem as a purification method. And we were able to get it up to 99% safe drinking water, from murky, dirty water to very safe, and all trying to use local and organic solutions. Now, our main focus has always been, what is the problem and how can we together solve it within the local context? And if there is no immediate solution, we can start to look external. And that's why we start to write applications and try to get organizations like Grundfos Foundation, Blue Gold, and other people to come on board. And then if that's not possible, I just leverage my friends, network of my friends all around the world, and then they come to support.
it's great. So people just call on you for any kind of crisis, and you are there to help.
Exactly.
Amazing.
Yeah, if we
So
don't do it, they will migrate. And or when you do something, they will come and take it. I had an instance where we had built a very beautiful garden that was in our previous location. We had a beautiful garden growing great food, and we were having fun. We were immediate community, we were all served. And when COVID happened, other people attacked our farm from far away because we were having quite a lot of abundant food and we're sharing it within the immediate location. But, because it was just within our space, we didn't realize other communities were struggling. So you had people who would come and steal your food and attack your space and all these things. So that is actually one of the reasons why we decided to first move to our current location and also restructure our setup. So instead of providing a service of training, why don't we train more young people to provide the training in their various communities? In that way, we can have Dream Village being replicated, whether it's called Dream Village or a different thing, that doesn't matter. but then it can be replicated in other communities.
Hmm.
The spirit of community is within the African setups, and the more civilization and you know every social media, the more people are getting more scattered and segregated. So our focus with Dream Village is create this close knit of people where you can trust and can rely on, and whether it's within our space or whether it's for the students who are located in the various communities, they know that we have this space we can go to if things are not going so well. And you have all the people there who are saying, we believe in you, we trust in you, and when comes to shove, we all go there and help you to make it, to build it, you know. And yeah, that has been our spirit, and that has been what we want to do. We want to continue to do. For me, this is also very inspiring because you can start to see the ripple effect of it going around. So we don't want to focus on our immediate communities, because when you do that, you make one space thrive. And in the end, when you are the only one thriving in the midst of scarcity, you become a target. So that's what we do not want. So we want to create abundance everywhere. And so for us, we are very open. If you tell us, okay, I want to set up a farm, I don't know how to do it, we'll come with our team, we'll come with our students, we come with our community. And it just becomes a fun exercise also. So, yeah.
It's so great. Yeah, build longer tables and not higher walls. This is
exactly. Perfect. That's the point.
Yeah, this community ethos, it's something I think we really need in the Western world. You know, with capitalism and individualism, everyone just kind of building their own castle. And actually, people are like so isolated, and I think so many people are so unhappy. So, yeah, I love everything you say. It's great.
Yeah,
Thank
I
you.
think what the it's not that people are isolated. People want to be in a community. If people doesn't want to be in a community, look at all the space that is, for instance, take Germany. You can go from one city to the next, and there's a lot of space, and nobody's occupying it. Now, this can be called private property or whatever, but people choose to live in the city. Why? Because they want to be connected with people. But there's still that iota of there's still that iota of privacy that kind of drives us to build these walls. So I think what we need more is that people are not, it's not that people are afraid of community, it's just because the systems are built in such a way that it makes you value your privacy more than the community. So because you can find your food in your house, in the supermarket, you can find everything you need within your own by using money, that you forget to engage the wider audience. So I think if we can start within the community to plant and set up like this permaculture glitz and permaculture hubs and places where people can find their basic food and turn gardens into community gardens, more and more people will become engaged. And I think that is already happening around Europe. So
yeah,
I look forward to this movement also spreading out. But
yeah,
Africa
great.
Has been doing it for long already. So
yeah.
I'm glad that Africa is leading the way in this aspect.
Yeah, just a community garden in a city, I think, can be a wonderful hub
Exactly.
for a community and
Exactly.
growing food, doing sustainable
Exactly.
practices. Yeah.
And, you know, it's not just books, it's libraries, it's books,
Mm.
it's children clothes, you know, it's people exchanging clothes. People, we can build a lot of sustainability in just that aspect alone, and people can connect more. I think there are solutions out there, so it's just a matter of leveraging them. We don't have to reinvent the wheel anyway.
Yeah, sure. They say, you know, the solutions for the world's problems are very, very simple.
Very simple. And that's why it's difficult to believe them sometimes.
Yeah. So I wonder, yeah, you've achieved so much already. It sounds like you've really, at this point, found your purpose and you're really living it. I wonder what have been some of your biggest challenges along the way doing all of this work?
Oh, of course, challenges is numerous. I'm working with very deprived communities, so usually you have to motivate them to throw in their weight. You know, somebody is hungry and you are telling them, let's save the planet. Somebody doesn't know what the next meal is going to be, and you're telling them, let's protect the environment. Now, without feeding them first, without providing the basic needs first, it's just for them, it's just nonsense. So, and I see all these great initiatives, let's build a big green wall, let's build a nice. But what is the basic solution? Are you meeting the needs of the people locally? So once that is not accomplished, you will have a challenge where you are growing the trees, but somebody is cutting it down. Or somebody is trampling upon it, or somebody is setting fire to it because they want to catch the next meat for the next meal. So some of the work we do requires already quite a big chunk of having a basic, some basic. In my case, I had to use a lot of family, personal funds, a lot of family, and I had to rely on a big network of mine just to get the basic support. And it's consistently a challenge because more and more people come in and you have to feed them. And we have a farm that we budget to feed about 5 to 6 people or 20 people or 30 people. In the next week, you have 40 people, 50 people available. And how do you feed them? You have to supplement that. And you have to expand the farms as well. All this requires resource. So the major challenge is resource, and dealing with people who are desperate and moved to a survival mode. Now, once people are in a survival mode, really, saving the planet is not their biggest problem. Their next problem is, how do I provide for my child the next meal? And if you cannot assure them of that meal, engaging them in any meaningful conversation or activity becomes really worthless. And so you need a basics. You need somewhere where you can have some sort of support or inflow of funds, where you can at least keep the basics available whilst helping the people to build these thriving possibilities. But that has been one of the areas. Like I said, also local support has been challenging. I have friends all over the world who have supported externally. But when it comes to the local support, like I said, these people are in survival mode. So their conscience, when you send an appeal for fund, you only have people say, oh, nice work. We believe in it, but we don't have the possibility to support. And so you have to rely a lot on external support. And unfortunately, I feel like I've drained all my friends because I'm constantly asking for help to build a water system for a community. And these are sustainable projects. Once they get going, they are able to run by themselves. But the basics needs to be coming from somewhere. And this is the challenge that we face, especially in terms of financial resources. And also getting people to buy into the kind of work we do, because these are long-term projects. When we are planting trees, we have to take care of them. Some people are more than happy to sponsor you to plant a tree, but what happens to the maintenance of those trees? We have a dry season of more than 6 months where water scarcity can make the tree to die. It requires a lot of innovation and a lot of maintenance to keep those trees alive. We are doing long-term projects, and a lot of funders are very short-sighted. We want results, 1 month, 2 months, 3 weeks, 1 year, 5 years. And this harms the kind of work we do. In the end, you find a lot of these so-called big corporations giving you very nice pictures, but on the ground, really doing not much, because the demand on the funding source or the investors is always, no, we want to see results. And that harms the kind of projects we do. But I believe that we do what we do because I love it. I'm passionate about it. And so for me, we'll keep persisting on that.
Yeah, amazing. It's very interesting. Thank you for sharing. And we're coming to the last few minutes. So if you could sum up your project, your vision, your mission in like just a few sentences, what would you say?
My mission is that we create an equitable world for everyone, especially for the deprived communities. We need to create space. When you go to the cities, you have all these hot spots, hubs coming up. I think that we can create a better world when we work together with the local people. And for me, that's the work I strive to achieve on a bigger scale. So I am more than happy to work with anybody who wants to join in this space. We are available. If you want to visit on the ground, we are available. If you want to go online, we are also available. Those who want to help online to seek for grants, to seek for resource personnel and stuff, we are here to build a world together.
Amazing. I think you're a superhero. I think you should be wearing a cape.
Well, luckily, I have a movie about my life that has been made that is currently winning quite a lot of international awards. So that makes me very proud. Yes,
Oh, wow. Okay, I didn't know about
it's
this.
called Zongo. It's called Zongo. You can find it on Amazon Prime. It's currently only on Amazon Prime, but we will make it available in the public space very soon. But those who have Amazon Prime, you can check it up. It's called Zongo, the biography of the African dreamer. And I'm more than happy because of this kind of work that we are doing. People recognize it, and then they came to make a story about it, and eventually it's become one very good movie that we can reference to when it comes to our project.
Yeah, that's great. And great for getting more help and more funding, I'm sure.
Yes,
Yeah.
yes, yes.
Okay. So thank you so much. And thank you to everyone listening. Yeah, it was a pleasure. And we will include the links to your website and everything with the podcast. And yeah, just thank you so much.
Thank you too for making time, and I appreciate you so much. Keep doing what you're doing. You're making a big difference in the world because every voice counts. Thank you.
Okay, great. Bye bye.
Bye.